listening to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Welcome to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail, the weekly radio talk show where we unwrap and reveal the secrets that successful people use, and you can too. Available at successunwrappedradio.com. My very special guest this week is Vic Johnson, author, motivational speaker, infopreneur, and creator of numerous motivational websites, including mp3motivators.com, mydailyinsights.com, and goals2go.com, the goal-setting blog. He's the author of the best-selling book, Day by Day with James Allen, and distributes the James Allen classic, As a Man Thinketh, on one of the web's hottest personal development sites, asamanthinketh.net. Vic is also host of the Goals to Go show on TSTN, the Success and Training Network, creator of the Claim Your Power Now seminars and CDs, and a featured speaker of the Jim Rohn Weekend Leadership event. Vic, thank you so much for being here today on Success Unwrapped.
Well, thank you, Heather. It's exciting to be with you.
Let us know, when you first started into your journey towards success, how did it all unfold?
Well, I don't think it really unfolded as much as it just slapped me in the face, you know, Heather. it was really pretty direct. You know, I had had some early success in my life as a young person, and I see this a lot, where people, in their 20s and their 30s may have some real fast success. A lot of times that comes just from the vast amounts of energy that you can invest in something. And energy, of course, creates momentum, and a lot of times people will achieve success based on that. But if it's not built on the right principles, which was my case, then the fleeting success will disappear, and you'll be faced with the harsh reality. And that's what happened to me in 1996 when my family and I were evicted from our home and given 48 hours to find another place to live, and then a year later lost the last automobile that we had, and for more than a year I had to drive a borrowed automobile, 12-year-old bomb, so to speak, that I borrowed from a friend. And, you know, so it was through that process, Heather, that humbled me, you know, and it caused me to go and seek the truth, go and seek change and the answers. And that's where it really literally slapped me in the face, because it was that experience that led me to the kind of things that we practice now and that we teach now.
Okay, so if it was not built on the right principles, what are the right principles?
Well, you know, there's a handful of them, and they're as old as, you know, human beings have been on this earth. They've been teaching the same principles. You know, Jim Rohn is a person who is very good at teaching the principles, and I've learned a lot from Jim, who's been a mentor to me. Bob Proctor is another one. But, you know, probably the number one principle of all, Heather, of course, Brian Tracy says it is, and I don't know anybody that disputes it, is that is the law of cause and effect. It says that every effect has a cause, so that if you can go back and isolate the cause and change the cause, you can change the effect. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Earl Nightingale gave us, you become what you think about. So that's a principle that is, in many ways, is tied to that cause and effect principle. And those, I believe, are the underlying principles of everything, because what you think about leads you to certain feelings. And those feelings create behaviors. And those behaviors create certain actions. And those actions create results. And it just continues to go in that cycle. So if you want to change a behavior, you got to go back all the way up to this beginning of the process and change the thinking, change the thought that led to that behavior. Whereas most of us, and myself included, we work on the behavior. You know, when we see something we're doing that we don't like what we're doing, or we've been told we should change it, or we've had some negative consequences from it, we'll go to work on the behavior, and we can't affect any change, and we're frustrated and discouraged when we got to go back and change the thinking. And the best example I can think of for myself is, for 20 years, I smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day. Not a very good behavior.
No.
If you want to live very long. And I tried to, you know, change that behavior over, you know, many times over 20 years. Sometimes I really wanted to. Sometimes it was because my children wanted me to, or my friends wanted me to, or the Surgeon General wanted me to, or whatever. But I was working on the behavior. And as long as I was working on the behavior, I was failing. And I see that today. People that have, their challenges with their weight, people who are trying to cure any addiction, which is a behavior, people who are trying to address, for instance, procrastination, any type of behavior at all that you deem as a negative behavior, if you're working on the behavior instead of working on the cause of the behavior, then you're in an uphill battle and you're probably not going to be successful. So, you know, there's the law of compensation, the universal law of gender, which says that everything has a gestation period. There's a handful of principles that, if you live your life by, then you're going to achieve success, not only achieve it, but you're going to maintain it and grow it. We can have a dozen calls, Heather, just on the principles.
Yeah. Okay, so from what you're saying, it's not enough to understand the law of cause and effect, because we learned that in probably grade 2. It's one of Newton's laws. But what you're saying is that the effect is the results or the behavior, and that the cause is actually the thoughts.
That's where everything originates. You know, everything there is, you look around you, whatever you see physically originated in thought. You know, if it's the universe, you're looking at nature, that originated in thought. Most every religion in the world teaches that the creation came from thinking, from thought. Then if you look at the things that are man-made, they originated in thought as well. Every single thing you see started in someone's thought. So, you know, that is what happens from the positive side and also from the negative side. You look at every person who is incarcerated today, who is behind bars, and the thing that got them behind bars originated in thought, originated in thinking. So that is the ultimate cause of everything. And when you understand that, and you see all the effects in your life, you understand that those effects all originated in thought. Then you know where to go work. You know where, you know what to address. You know what's got to be changed.
A lot of the listeners hear these principles week after week, and I know that they know in theory that what you're saying is correct, but I can tell from some of the emails that they haven't put it into practice, and maybe they don't quite understand it. What can you tell them that actually drives this home, that it is in fact their thoughts, their own thoughts, that have created their current reality?
Heather, I would have to disagree a little bit, because I don't think it's because they don't understand it. They might not understand it, but you don't have to understand something to put it into practice. I don't understand how electricity works. It confounds me, really, when I stop and analyze electricity. I don't understand how it works, but I don't have any problem at all walking over and flipping on the light switch.
Right.
Okay, because I know what the result will be. So I don't, you know, once I know what the result is, I don't have to understand how it works in order to use the tool. So I don't think it's the fact that people don't understand it as much as it is as I'm not sure that people have a strong enough motivation. They may say that they do, you know, but I'm not sure that they do. It reminds me of a story of a kind of a country story of a guy walking down an old country road with a friend, and they passed a house and there was a dog who was laying on the porch, and he was just making an awful sound and just sounded like he was in tremendous pain. And, you know, one turned to the other one and said, you know, something's wrong with that dog. And the friend said, no, he's like that all the time. And he goes, he's like that all the time? He said, yeah. And he says, well, what's wrong with him? And he says, well, he's just sitting on a nail. And the guy turned to him, he said, he's sitting on a nail? And he goes, yeah, he's sitting on a nail, and that makes him holler like that. And the other guy says, well, why doesn't he get up off the nail? And the friend says, because it doesn't hurt bad enough. And I think a lot of times that's what keeps us from putting into action sometimes the things that we know will get the results. And we know, just like we know from flipping the switch, if the light comes on, we don't know why it comes on. Well, we see other people getting results from certain actions. We're taught that if you do this, if you create these particular habits, that you'll get certain results. then the question is, well, why don't you put those into action? Well, I can tell you that for a long time in my life, I heard the same things everyone else hears. You know, I heard that you needed to write your goals down, you need to put them in writing, that it has a 1,000% greater chance of success if your goals are written down. I heard that for 20 years, but I never wrote them down. So, you know, but I reached a point in my life where the pain became so great that I was willing to get up off the nail, so to speak. In fact, I knew that if I didn't get off the nail, that I would never ease the pain. I'd never find a cure for the pain. So sometimes I think it's just, and you know, a lot of times we say, we complain about perhaps the pain in our life, but we're just like that dog that's laying on the nail. It just doesn't hurt bad enough.
So are you saying that they have to go through even more pain, more fear, more discomfort, and then they'll finally get it and start to do the right things and think the right things?
No, I don't think that. I certainly wouldn't want to wish that on anyone. I wouldn't want to wish my experience and that pain on anyone. I mean, if I had to do it all over again, I would do it because it had some very valuable lessons for me. And I've made a lot of money in the last few years as a result of the lessons I learned. But golly, I wouldn't want to wish that on anyone. My point is that they need some additional type of motivation, because the motivation they've uncovered so far is not enough to get them to take the action, even though they know by flipping the switch, the lights will come on, but they won't flip the switch. They won't get up, cross the room, and flip the switch. So you got to uncover the motivation. What is that? Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be pain, although I'll tell you psychologically, from our study and understanding of human beings, people are much more motivated by a desire to ease pain than they are for, to acquire pleasure or to acquire something. So it's the avoidance of pain is the greatest motivator. So, you know, if you're trying to create more motivation, a lot of times I believe that the reason people procrastinate, the reason that people don't take the action is two reasons. Either their dream is not big enough. A small dream doesn't have any power to it. You know, it's not enough to motivate you if you just got a very small dream. You know, if you've been earning $75,000 a year and you got a goal to raise your income this year by 10%, $7,500, that's not a huge goal. You know, I mean, yeah, a lot of people say, well, $7,500 a year would do a lot for me. I could do this, I could do this. But it's not really that much money in the whole, you know, in relation to what you've been making. It's not a very big dream. So the first time you encounter any type of resistance, then you look at your goal, $7,500 a year. Oh, well, you know, that's just $700 a month. No big deal. I'm doing okay the way I am. No need to go the extra mile. No need to get up an hour earlier. No need to read the extra book. No need to do that. It's not that much money. But now if the goal is $250,000 a year and I've been making $75,000, that's a significant, significant difference. You know, you're making $7,000 a month, and then all of a sudden the goal is $20,000 a month. That's a huge difference. That makes major changes in someone's life to go from $7,000 a month to $20,000 a month. It determines where they live, both in terms of size and the home they may have, in terms of location. Means that they may have be able to have more than one home even on that type of income. So that makes a major change. It determines what type of automobile or automobiles, in plural, that you may drive. Certainly you can drive a much, much more luxury vehicle at $250,000 a year than you can at $75,000 a year. So, you know, there is a factor there that I believe I say that big doers are big dreamers. You got a big dream, you're going to be a big doer. And it's easy to take action and sustain that action and overcome obstacles when you've got a really big goal that you're excited about, that you really want. You got to have a desire for it, because it can be a huge goal. You can have a huge goal, but if there's no desire for it, Napoleon Hill says the beginning of all achievement is desire. You know, so you got to have that first. And it's got to be, Napoleon Hill described it as white hot, which is very, very hot. He described it as consuming. he described it as obsessive. You know, that's the type of desire that you've got to have to reach a big goal, but you've got to have a big goal first. And then the other reason for procrastination is you don't have any belief in the goal. Those two reasons, not having a big enough dream and not having a belief in the dream. You could have a goal to make $250,000 a year that could be exciting to you, but you could still procrastinate if you don't have any belief that you could really achieve that. If you have the goal, but you really doubt that you can achieve it, then again, you're not going to do what it takes to achieve that goal. You're not going to engage in the activity that it takes. You're not going to overcome the obstacles, overcome the fear, overcome the things that are in your path if you don't believe you can achieve it. James Allen says belief precedes all action.
For you, was the breakthrough a culmination of all the different events that you talked about, or was there one aha moment where it all kind of clicked and your thinking started to change and therefore your results started to change?
Well, there was definitely one moment. It was life-defining for me. Now, I'll have to tell you that prior to that moment, I had already been engaged in some pretty serious change because the wheels had fallen off my wagon. You know, I was at the foot of the cross, as I fondly, you know, say. I was desperate, and I had already sought the answers, and I was already an avid, you know, reader, just devouring everything I could find. I was listening to audios every day. I was going to seminars every time they opened the doors. I was beginning to take action to change the behavior, just changing my thinking and then changing the things that I did to change the behavior. I was already engaged in that, but, you know, I had not seen on the outside any significant change yet. I went to a seminar in Jacksonville, Florida for the weekend, scraped together the money to go because I didn't have the money, scraped together, went to the seminar on Saturday night. We're more than halfway through the seminar. And the speaker on the stage said, the size of your success is determined by the size of your belief. And those words hit me, I mean, right between the eyes. It was like someone picked up a baseball bat and just swung it and hit me right between the eyes. That's what it did to me. And it did it instantly. I knew when she uttered those words, the size of your success is determined by the size of your belief. I knew that that was the last piece of the puzzle for me. I had been working diligently to improve myself, to grow, to change my thinking. And then when I got that last piece of the puzzle, and those words she quoted are words from David Schwartz's best-selling all-time classic, The Magic of Thinking Big, which I'd read before, by the way, many times. I just had never, ever stopped and read those words as clearly as they came across that night. So I went to work on my belief within 90 days, and I was focused for 90 days, hard as I could do, hard as I've ever done anything. I focused on changing my beliefs, and within 90 days, I began to see changes in my life. James Allen said it's not possible to move within and stand still without. So I had gone through some really significant change on the inside, and now it's beginning to show up on the outside, or I'm attracting opportunities that I had not attracted before. People are coming into my life. I'm attracting people into my life that I had not attracted before. Within 6 months, I had, won a national sales contest with the company that I was with at the time. Within a year, I'd created a six-figure income to go from earning $15,000 a year, qualifying for the federal earned income tax credit. And then all of a sudden, a year later, I'm making a six-figure income. It was like a totally different life. And then I went on from there and have each year, you know, gone farther and farther than the year before in quantum leaps, not in incremental leaps, not a 10% increase or a 15% increase, but double, triple, quadruple the previous year. And it all came, that moment, that night was a defining moment.
You were obviously at a place where that was the exact right phrase to kick you up a few notches. Now, I find a lot of the times people will listen to something like that and they'll say, okay, I have to increase my belief. And they'll go, yeah, I believe I'm going to be a millionaire. And then the doubt kicks in and the fear kicks in and they end up right back where they started. So what's the secret to actually believing the belief, for lack of a better term?
Well, there's a process to go through to create a strong belief, but one of the first things you have to do is you have to uncover the limiting beliefs. You know, there are a set of beliefs that were passed on to you that you inherited, that you have accepted for your whole life as being true, and they're not true. I'll give you an example of a widely held belief. For thousands of years, people believed that the earth was flat.
Yeah.
Stop and think about the decisions that were made. Every single night as a family sat down, the decisions they made, stop and think about the business decisions. Every single day, people made decisions based on that fact, okay, or that truth. Wasn't true. We know it's not true. See, belief is simply defined as this. A belief is something that you accept as true or real. It doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean it's real. It just means you accept it as true or real. And when you accept it as true or real, you act on it as if it's true or real. So for thousands of years, mankind accepted that the earth was flat. And decisions were made based on that fact. And we know it's not true today, but they didn't know it wasn't. So they acted on that untruth. Well, you have the same things in your life. There are things that you inherited, just like you, if you were born in those days and the first time you're old enough to understand and you ask the question, they come back and say the earth is flat. You inherited that belief and it's not true. Well, you have some now. I grew up with some. We all grow up with things that we learn from our parents. We learn from our teachers. We learn from our peers, our friends, and they were passed on to them, which they passed on. I'll give you an example of one, very common one. It takes money to make money.
Yeah.
I heard that my whole life. It takes money to make money. Now, here's the thing. If you hold that belief as true, it takes money to make money, you will never, ever attempt to go into business for yourself. Why? Because you know it takes money to make money, and if you don't have money, you can't go into business for yourself. Okay? Well, that we know that's not true. We know that's not true because there's too many examples of people who have become filthy rich who started with nothing.
Yeah.
Okay? So part of uncovering the limiting beliefs is, number one, you got to identify them. Number two, you got to then find the evidence that they're not true. So it's very simple to go find the evidence. There's enough people that have made money without having it that there's enough evidence. You know, another one is you got to have a college degree to succeed. That was one that I held for a long time, a limiting belief that I felt like that some of my lack of success was due to the fact that I didn't have a college degree. And a lot of people believe that and first of all, I believe in education. You know, my children have gone to college. I support that. But, you know, the fact that, you know, you believe that you have to have a college degree to be successful, we know that's not true because all you have to do is look to the world's richest person, Bill Gates, dropped out of college at 19 and never went back. So that's not a true statement. And there are many, many, many other ones. And they're tied to people's gender. They're tied to people's, you know, the way people look. Some people believe that to be successful, you have to be attractive. Okay, and so they this is kind of the Hollywood mentality the culture of Hollywood, that you have to be attractive to be successful. And I like to tell people, point them to an example where that's false. I live in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, which is about 4 hours north of Palm Beach County, Florida. In Palm Beach County, Florida, there are 46,000 millionaires.
Wow.
In one county, 46,000, the wealthiest county in America, 46,000 millionaires in Palm Beach County, Florida. And I say, if you ever want to get the proof that you don't have to be attractive to be successful, all you got to do is drive to Palm Beach, where there's some of the ugliest people you'll ever see in your whole life. Okay? So you don't have to be attractive to be successful. So there are all these limiting beliefs that people carry. You got to identify them, number one, and then number two, you have to find the evidence, and there is evidence somewhere that they're not true.
Okay. We've been talking about the kinds of thoughts that will motivate someone to take action towards their goals. Now, a lot of the times, action can end up just meaning working way too hard, and they end up in another rut, different from the rut they were in before, where they're just, you know, working 16 hours a day in pursuit of that goal, and then they never actually have time to enjoy the results when they do come.
Right.
How do they avoid falling into that trap?
Well, you know, first of all, if you're working, you should be working towards something. You know, you shouldn't be just working without a goal. There should be a reason for everything you do. There is a principle in goal setting called the True North Principle of Goal Setting. You know, if you had a compass, it always points to what is true north.
Mm-hmm.
That's the principle of a compass. Well, there's a principle in goal setting called True North, which borrows the principle from the compass. And what it simply says is this, that every action you take is either a step toward your goal or a step away from your goal. There is no neutral step. In other words, if you had a compass and you're standing anywhere on the globe and you've got a compass pointed true north, if you take a step, it doesn't matter in which direction you take it, but if you take a step, it will either be a step toward true north or a step away from true north. It's only one of those two outcomes.
Right.
Well, the same is true with your goals. Every step you take is either a step towards your goal or a step away from your goal. There's no other choice, no other outcome. So you should be evaluating every action you take. Is it a step towards your goal or a step away from your goal? So now that you've done that, then you begin to look at how you progress through the day and the activities that you engage in. And if you find yourself 90% of your day or more is engaged in activities that are a step away from your goal, that's how you can work 16 hours and be in a rut.
Yeah.
And if you have a goal and you have a direction to go in, that goal shouldn't take you 16 hours a day to achieve. So if you find yourself in that condition, then you can't possibly be in on the right plan to achieve your goal, because you shouldn't create a plan to begin with. I mean, you wouldn't sit down and design a plan that said, I'm going to work 16 hours. So if you find yourself in that situation, you obviously, you know, you're not walking true north to your goal.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy, actually. Now, if we take a look at the compass, when you're walking towards true north, it's one fine point. And anything else, any degree off that true north, would be walking away from true north, because it's not true north. Is that the same way it works with goals, that there's one targeted set path and everything else is walking away from it?
Well, not everything else is walking away from it, but sometimes to get from one step to the next, you may have to walk away from true north. For instance, if you were walking true north and you came to a ravine, you know, if you continued true north, you'd die.
Yeah.
So you'd have to take time to walk around to find a spot where you could cross the ravine. In all the time that you're walking around, you're not walking true north, but you're still focused on your goal, which is to go true north. So when you're in a process of going for your goal and you come to an obstacle and you realize this is going to take longer, it's going to cost more, it's not going to have, you know, I'm not going to get there as quickly as I thought. I'm not going to, you know, get the outcome that I thought, but it's still what I want. And you may have to take a diversion. But you know when you take that diversion that the focus is still on true north.
What does your acronym WAIT stand for?
Oh, I don't know whether I should tell you that, Heather. That's kind of top secret.
Maybe we should wait to find out.
Well, you know what happens usually is when you come to one of our seminars, and it's actually an idea that I stole from Bob Proctor, who's a mentor of mine. When you come to one of our seminars, in order to get in, we give you a wristband that's engraved with the letters WAIT. And at the very beginning of the seminar, you know, one of the questions we ask is anyone who can guess what WAIT stands for. And when I saw, I was actually speaking at Bob's Science of Getting Rich seminar in Las Vegas in September of 2005, and I saw that wristband, and it just took me as to how simple a concept it was and how powerful the impact was. And what it stands for is, what am I thinking? And we teach you that at the beginning of our seminar because we go through a process about accepting responsibility and then about the definition of what metacognition is, which is thinking about what you're thinking about. And the idea is that most people go through life without ever stopping to think about those 58,000 or whatever it is thoughts that go through your brain every day. And you just kind of float, or you're pushed, or you bounce through life or whatever. And you never analyze what you're thinking about. So the wristband is a reminder, and we encourage people to wear it when they leave so that as they go through the day and they look down, they see that wristband, it automatically makes them stop and think, okay, what am I thinking about? And the testimonials that we've gotten back have been rather interesting because we've had people that wrote back to say that they thought they were very positive people until they began to monitor their thoughts. And they realized that a lot of their thinking was junk, that a lot of their thinking was a whole lot more negative than they thought it was. So so now you have an inside secret, but don't let that keep anybody from coming to one of our seminars.
I'm sure there's a lot more that they can get from being there live anyhow. Now, you were talking earlier about how our thoughts create our results, the cause and the effect. But a lot of people do it the other way. They let the effect, they let the results dictate their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
What's the secret to turning that around?
Well, again, it's number one, being conscious of them, because a lot of times we are not conscious of them. And then you have to be pretty diligent. I mean, there is a battle that, you know, you have to engage in, and the battle is with that little man or little woman sitting on your shoulder. Who sometimes talks louder than you do, who talks to you throughout the day, who's been talking to you for a long time, and most of the time you've been following their advice. And so, you know, there is the process of the understanding of the principle of metacognition and then monitoring it and then being able to do the same thing you would do if you walked out in your favorite garden and you saw some weeds coming up. You would walk over and immediately remove them, you know, because you'd know for the health of your garden that you'd need to do that. And it's the same concept. You've got a certain response, and you've trained yourself over the years that when certain things occur, you respond in a certain way. In my case, one of the ones that I've had to be very cognizant of is the idea that I don't have enough time. And the thought, I never have enough time. I never have enough time. You know, when I'm under deadlines, when I'm under pressure to perform, when I'm under pressure to produce, you know, I don't have enough time. And so I've had to train myself that when I feel that coming on, when I know that I'm under a deadline, when I know that I've got things that have to be done, and then, of course, usually those are the times that other things choose to rear their ugly head, too, to make it even worse, is I've had to train myself to immediately respond instead of saying, you know, I don't have enough time, I don't have enough time, is to say I always have enough time to do everything I need to do. I always have enough time to do everything I need to do. And that then changes my behavior, my feelings, which now I'm a little calmer, which now changes my behavior. So now I'm not rushing as much. Now I'm not going to make the kind of mistakes that I would make if I felt under pressure. My blood pressure is not going to go up as much. I'm not going to feel as stressed. I'm going to think more clearly than if I would getting stressed about it. You know, it's amazing what your thoughts can do to your body. But if you stop and you think, where a thought can cause your tear ducts to release tears, and that's a physical response to a thought. Nothing physical caused those tears to be released. That was caused by a thought. So once you become conscious of the power of your thinking and you begin to monitor it and you change the response, and when you change it enough, now it becomes a habitual response, and now you've begun to affect, you know, serious change in your outcomes and in your results.
A lot of the times it seems that people can actually make themselves sick with the thoughts as well. Like, I think I'm coming down with something or something's coming on. And then sure enough, they're the ones that get sick.
Sure. Medical evidence to support that. I mean, it's been proven by some prestigious universities. Duke Medical is a very prestigious institution, and they've proven it. And as many, many clinical studies have demonstrated that. So if it has that power, you know, ultimately that's where we got to look first.
Beyond the thoughts that we think, how important are the words that we actually say? Because I know that sometimes someone can be thinking positive thoughts most of the time, but then it seems that sometimes when people get into groups, they reflect the language of the people around them. So
right.
If the group happens to be saying, oh, this job sucks, then all of a sudden you're talking negative even though you had the positive thought to begin with.
Well, there are a couple of observations there. First of all, your grandmother, your mother, whomever told you birds of a feather flock together.
Yeah.
That's not just an old expression. That actually is true meaning. And, you know, it's so incredible that we will counsel our children that when we're concerned about who they're hanging out with, and yet we don't ever follow that advice. But that would be one observation, that if you're hanging out with the kind of people that would tend to generate negative thinking and negative responses and negative talk, then you might want to look at the flock that you're flying with. And you might want to look at the results that that flock is getting, because, you know, you're likely to get the same result. People who study demographics, who study people, in fact, your big marketers like American Express even understand that neighborhoods, people actually within a neighborhood, have a lot of common characteristics. They have a similar income. They drive similar vehicles and on and on and on. And so, you know, if you want to change, if you're a thousandaire and you want to be a millionaire, you're probably not going to become one if you keep hanging around thousandaires. If you're a millionaire and you want to be a billionaire, the chances are you're not going to be one if you keep hanging out with millionaires, because billionaires think differently than millionaires do. Millionaires think differently than thousandaires. And until you begin to think that way, you're probably not going to get that result. So that would be my first observation. The second observation is that if you are in a crowd and in a group, and you know, you have conscious thought of your response, if you allow yourself to get caught up in the same type of negative response, the same type of negative discussion, that's a choice you made. You know, you can sit there and politely listen, or not even politely, you can just sit there and listen. And that's exactly what I've conditioned myself to do. It doesn't matter what group of people that I'm in. You see, I know the law of attraction, which says you get more of whatever it is that you think about. So if I want to get more grief, all I got to do is talk about it. All I got to do is think about it. And guess what? I'm going to get more of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I want to talk about the bad weather, and all I got to do is talk about it, you can be rest assured there's probably going to be more bad weather. If I want to talk about, you know, the cold that's coming on, as you just cited the example a minute ago, if you want to talk about that, then it's almost a certain likelihood that if you talk about it enough, that you're probably going to have that condition within a short period of time. But it's your choice. You know, it's like everything else you do. What you think is your choice. What you say is your choice. Does it take some discipline? Well, sure it does. But I mean, you know, another example that your mother may have used with you when talking about you and your friends is, I'm sure she may have said to you, well, if your friends jumped off a cliff, would you jump off a cliff too?
Yeah.
All right. So if your friends or the crowd that you're in are talking in a negative fashion, that's just a choice. I would suggest that if you're really wanting to do something with your life, you probably want to minimize your time around that group. And then during that time, if that does occur, is find a way to politely, you know, dismiss yourself from the group and go find a group of people who are looking for something much more out of life and who can see all the great opportunities in life.
Speaking of observing people and coming up with conclusions, what can you tell by looking at someone's posture?
Oh, I think you can tell an awful lot by looking at someone's posture. And you can look at, Orson Swett Marden writes in one of his books about the idea that you can tell by a person's face about what's going on inside. You can tell by their face, by their posture, exactly what type of thinking is going on in their mind. You know, you have someone who has a posture of confidence who, you know, we were on a phone call the other day with Bob Proctor, and someone on the call mentioned that they had never seen anyone walk with the confidence of Bob Proctor. And he had shared with us how he had seen that as a young person, someone who walked like that, and that it was something he chose to model and, you know, something that he's been practicing for years, and the thinking that goes behind that he's been working on for years. When you see the look on someone's face and you say they look worried, what does that mean? Obviously, that's driven by some thinking that's going on at that particular point in time. And that would hold true of posture or any other physical display. You know, you're going to display ultimately on the outside is going to be manifested of what's going on the inside.
A lot of the guests on this show talk about the law of attraction. And so the listeners know like attracts like. But you take it almost one step further in saying that what we seek is actually also seeking us.
So just stop and think about the law of attraction. I mean, the law of attraction are two, you know, are like-minded people, like-minded things, like-minded objects or whatever that are attracted to one another. So if you take it to the greatest conclusion and you would, you know, scientifically observe it, then you would have to find that if you started from the moment when they were, when the attraction was manifested, when they met each other or they became aware of each other, and then you would take and go in reverse now through time, you would have to go back and see, you could plot where both parties were at, you could plot and see that they both are seeking one another through the path that they're taking. So whatever it is that you're seeking in life is also seeking you. Let's say you have a desire for a particular automobile. Let's say I like Escalade, a Cadillac Escalade. That would, you know, for years was a desire of mine. Well, someone over here who sells Cadillac Escalades, what are they doing? They're seeking people who are interested in Cadillac Escalades, aren't they?
Of course.
Okay. Well, whatever it is I'm seeking, Cadillac Escalade is also seeking me.
Huh.
You know, so how many times have you ever found yourself in a state where you told someone, I'm looking for something, and then they said, oh, I know someone who's doing that, or I know where you can get that. Okay, well, one of the rules of the law of attraction is if you're going to see the law of attraction at work, what do you have to do? You have to put out to the universe what it is you're seeking. You make it easier then for what's seeking you to find you.
Yeah. So basically, not only do our thoughts kick into place the attraction process where you're going to attract that thing, but you're actually kicking in something much bigger where you're actually making something else seek you and find you like a homing missile almost.
Sure, absolutely.
It's bigger than a magnet.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the other laws you had mentioned earlier on is not one that I've heard anyone else mention on these interviews, which is the law of gender. Can you explain a little more how that works?
Well, the law of gender says, you know, that everything has a gestation period. You know, my friends in Iowa and Nebraska and the corn-growing states know that I believe it's 92 days from the day that you plant a seed of corn until you can harvest an ear of corn. So the gestation period for corn, 92 days. My daughter is hopefully in the next couple of days going to deliver our third grandchild, and we know that the gestation period for a human being is about 9 months. So throughout nature, everything has a gestation period. And ideas are things. So ideas have gestation periods as well. Goals have gestation periods. See, a lot of times when we set a goal and we don't reach the goal, we get frustrated, we get discouraged, we think we didn't do something right, you know, wasn't a good goal or wasn't a good choice or whatever it was. Many times, it's not that there was anything wrong with the goal or there was anything wrong with us. It's just we didn't understand the gestation period for that goal, so we put the wrong date on it. We had the wrong expectation. So when you understand that, then you understand that there is a gestation period for everything, and we don't always know what that is. You know, we can say with a reasonable certainty that corn is 92 days. we can say with a reasonable certainty that human beings are 9 months, but we do know human beings have been born in much less time. And we also know historically that human beings even go longer than 9 months. But generally speaking, one would expect 9 months. Generally speaking, for corn, 92 days. But there are some things we don't know the gestation period of. And so if you build your expectation in to a date, you know, what's important to expect is that you're going to achieve the goal. And you certainly have a target to reach the goal. But if you get to a certain date that you selected and you haven't reached it, it's not then time to fold up the tent, throw the towel in, go whine somewhere and pout for a month. It's time to think maybe I was wrong about the gestation period and I need to change the date.
So is it better to set that date in the first place and then change it if you reach the date and it hasn't arrived? Or is it better to leave it open-ended and not set the date?
No, don't ever leave it open-ended. You know, you're in Toronto and I'm in Florida. If I said, okay, I'm going to come see you, Heather, in Toronto, and you said when, I said, I don't know, let's leave it open-ended.
Okay? It's not going to happen.
I'll just show up whenever I get there. Well, you know, that probably won't happen. It certainly wouldn't be convenient for you, not something you'd like. And so we set a date on it. Heather, I'll be in Toronto on November the 20th. But if somewhere along the way, if I were driving, somewhere along the way there was a detour, if I'm flying and, you know, I have to go through Atlanta, then I can almost assure you there's going to be a detour. Just joking. So, you know, then I may not get there on November 20th, but I'm still coming, still my goal. Maybe the 21st now, maybe the 22nd.
So when someone's following their goal and they reach that point of frustration and quite often they quit, like you said, throw in the towel, what should the thought process be at that point instead of, I'm going to give this up?
Well, you have to learn how to fail forward. You know, a great book by John Maxwell, Failing Forward, all the most successful people in the world have learned how to have fallen in love with failure. You know, you reach that point, you didn't achieve your date. You know, you learn when you see there are a lot of things I did this year that I did for the first time, and they either took me longer, cost me more money, or I wasn't as successful as I thought I could be. But the next time I do them, I know what I need to change. And I can do it in half as the time with half the money and twice the results. So it's an evaluation, learning how to use failure as an evaluation tool and not being defined by it. You know, a failure is an event. And when you evaluate it as an event, now you learn from it. Now there becomes a lesson in it. And now you can move forward from it.
Sometimes I find that one of the principles of the law of attraction that people find the most difficult to conceive is the attitude of abundance. They've grown up with this lack mentality. They're set where they are. They're in the process of earning a certain amount. And for some reason, it's in their mind that that's all there is. And if they take too much wealth, there's going to be less for somebody else. How do you get people to understand that abundance does exist and they should have an abundant attitude?
Well, you know, it's kind of like if I went down to the beach or tonight I'm at a lake place that we bought recently. You know, if I went out to the lake with my empty cup and I scooped up a cup of water to drink, there would be no perceptible change at all in the lake. I could come back up here with my cup of water and I could enjoy my cup of water and I've changed nothing. And, you know, that's really how I see abundance. Now, you know, some people would argue, well, if enough people went down to the lake and with their cup, then there would be no water left in the lake. But those are only people who see everything from a lack mentality, which is where I saw life for many years. You know, what's amazing, Heather, that when my life was upside down and I can barely earn $15,000 a year, we were in the middle of the largest economic expansion in the history of mankind. Never before in history has so much wealth been created in such a short time as was created in the mid-1990s. In Florida, everywhere you turn, millionaires and billionaires are being created, and I can't see opportunity anywhere, and it's all around me. And that's from an attitude of lack. So when you have an attitude of lack, you have the idea, well, if I take the the glass of water out of the lake, there's no more water. But I know that we live in a universe, and Stephen Hawking is probably the premier quantum physicist in the world. The guy, you may have seen him, he's a quadriplegic. He can't speak. He is in a wheelchair. He has very limited mobility. He has no control, can't write, can't type, and yet he's written some best-selling books and what have you. But Stephen Hawking is one of the preeminent scientists in the world today and one of the preeminent scientists ever. And he says, and other scientists of similar preeminence agree with him, that we are in a universe that today is continuing to expand physically. The world we live in gets bigger every single day. So we are in a universe of continual creation. We're not living in a universe that is declining, that is shrinking. We are living in a universe that is expanding. So when you're under constant expansion, there can be no lack. The only thing that there's ever a lack in is a lack of belief and a lack of ideas. And when you understand that all success in life is all what can always be attributed to an idea, and this is when Bob Proctor explained his concept that had been passed on to him of abundance and the idea that there is unlimited wealth in the universe. And when he said that, you know, and I had just come out of my troubling time, and he said there's unlimited wealth in the universe. You know, my lack mentality, the first thing I go was, oh, no, that's not true. Because if you stop the merry-go-round and you counted all the money, you know, if there was, you stopped and just said, you know, right this moment we're going to count all the money in the world, then there's got to be a finite number. There's got to be a specific number. And if there is a specific number, then there has to be a limit to what the wealth is. As Bob Proctor says, there's unlimited wealth. And I didn't understand that. And he went on and he said, there's unlimited wealth because there are unlimited ideas. And money is nothing more than an idea put into existence. And people trade money for your idea. So when you can continue to create ideas, money is created. And if you stop and just look at what a dollar does, Michael Angier, a friend of mine at SuccessNet.org, and I don't remember the family, but it was a Rockefeller, I believe, who had gone to Vermont and had invested $15 or $20 million in a new home. And Michael was using the idea that overnight this Rockefeller had doubled the amount of money that he had, the $15 million. He had doubled that amount in the universe. Now, someone says that's not possible, but let's stop and think about it. He takes $15 million and he goes and he has a house built in Vermont. When he gets through with the house, he has a $15 million asset. So what happened to the $15 million he invested for the house? That $15 million went to contractors, subcontractors, other people, mortgage brokers, and other people involved in the sale, who they in turn invested their portion of the $15 million into something. Whether it was groceries or whether it was their own house or whether it was their automobile. So now you have a $15 million house plus you have the $15 million that was spent for it invested in other things. Now you have $30 million worth of capital, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But then guess what? Those people who invested it, they didn't stop. They continued to invest it. So now you've multiplied the $15 million again. So if that's the case of what we can do with an idea, then truly there is unlimited wealth in the world.
A lot of your ideas that you've manifested into money take the form of websites. What are some of your websites that the listeners could go and check out if they want to find out more?
Okay. Well, first thing I would encourage them to do, if they've never read the 100-plus-year-old classic As a Man Thinketh by James Allen, it is the 28 most powerful pages in literary history, a little tiny book. I read it in one night, the first time I ever read it. Mark Victor Hansen says he's read it over 25 times, every major writer of the 20th century has been influenced by it, from Norman Vincent Peale to Dennis Waitley to Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale, Bob Proctor, Jim Rohn, you name them. It is a very, very powerful book. You can download a free copy there. MP3motivators.com. We have MP3 audios of Bob and Jim and Brian Tracy and John Maxwell and others. ClaimYourPowerNow.com is our seminar site. We have coming up, I believe it's October 12th, 13th, 14th, 2007, Claim Your Power Now West Coast out in L.A. We have MyDailyInsights.com for people who would like to get an uplifting message every day. GoalsToGo.com, and that's with the number 2, goals-2-go.com. We're here almost entering the goals season. Many people are already planning their goals for the new year. We've got a lot of goal solutions. And then over at VicJohnson.com is my speaking blog, and we've got some motivation inspiration over there.
So lots of websites for them to visit and keep them busy for a little while and get some free gifts along the way as well.
Good.
Well, thank you so much, Vic, for being here today and for helping us unwrap the concepts behind motivation and achieving what we want.
Very good. Thank you, Heather. It's been a pleasure. Good luck to you. God bless.
This has been Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Be sure to tune in to the next edition of Success Unwrapped, helping you to unwrap and discover your own potential for success. Until next time, keep unwrapping. I'm Heather Vail.